I'm really excited to be talking about making the case against American revivalism.
Dr. Larry Rast, president of Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, talking about his presentation at this year's Making the Case conference.
And here we'll be dealing with the twofold character of this movement, namely its theological character, which is a form of Arminianism, that is, decision theology, and then what we all know so well, its practice, revivalism, as such. Both are pervasive in American Christianity and have become exports to other countries.
You can meet and hear Dr. Rast at the 2021 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, July 23rd and Saturday, July 24th at Concordia University, Chicago. For more information, visit issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385.
I understand that President Biden demonstrates a degree of piety and ritual, but I don't know the value of someone's faith that can perform rituals to the neglect of their doctrine, and often not just to the neglect, but to the rejection of their church's doctrine.
Why all of a sudden are we going with the mind being right and the body being wrong, rather than our actual physical reality being right and maybe working on the mind to align with the body?
And that, in my opinion, is the biggest ideological danger in the Western world. People who are frightened witless of being considered bigots, and therefore who do nothing to support the truth.
Jesus himself teaches that it is possible to lose saving faith. Once saved, always saved is just a lie.
This is Mary from Iowa. I love listening to Issues Etc. while walking on Iowa country roads.
What was it like during those two generations of communism in the former Soviet Union? What was it like for Christians during that time? And when the Berlin Wall finally fell there near the end of the 20th century, what changed? Is the Russian government currently neutral or friendly toward Christianity? And what about Lutheranism in Russia? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc., coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be talking about Lutheranism in Russia with Dr. Alexei Streltsov. He is rector of the Lutheran Theological Seminary in Novosibirsk, Russia. To kick everything off today, a little bit later, we'll spend some time with you, our listeners, via listener email, talkback@issuesetc.org, and the Issues Etc. listener comment line, 618-223-8382. Dr. Michael New of National Review Online will join us after that. We'll talk about this amazing success, 90 laws passed in the states, pro-life laws, just in 2021 so far. Will that continue for the rest of the year? And then we'll be teaching a Sunday school lesson, God Rescuing Israel, through the Passover meal. Pastor Tom Baker of Law and Gospel will be our guest. Joining us to discuss Lutheranism in Russia, Dr. Alexei Streltsov. He is rector of Lutheran Theological Seminary in Novosibirsk, Russia. Dr. Streltsov, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thank you. Greetings.
Talk about life in the Soviet Union before the fall of the Berlin Wall.
It's very difficult to explain it to a person who did not grow up in that paradigm, because it was like a closed system. I would say in a couple of words that for children growing up with normal families, like brothers, sisters, parents, it was relatively okay. And in Soviet Union, at least by the end of it, children's literature was quite developed and it was international. So growing up, we read some stories like everybody else in the world did. Mary Poppins and Alice in the Wonderland and Carlson, all that stuff. But the minute you got into adult life, it changed dramatically, and it was very different. So for people in Soviet Union, it was like relatively good to stay more like in a children's mode, to be in more safe environment. And I observe some similar trends in today's United States, for better or worse, but growing up in Soviet Union, that was really how it was. I felt relatively safe when I was little, and then growing up in later years of school, I saw lots of hostility outside on the street, and it was definitely less safe.
Talk a little bit about that adult life
young adult life there in the Soviet Union?
Well, you see, the minute you became teenager and then adult, and you began to interact with the outside world, you saw that what you read about in books and what was taught in school did not correspond to practical life outside. For example, as a school student, we were supposed to be assigned to a factory because it was the country of workers and peasants, so to speak. And so coming to the factory, you have one idea in your head of how the working class was, and then within the factory, you see a very different world. The way people speak, the way they come drunk to work, the way they want to work less because in socialist system, you do not get any more money for hard work. And if you do harder work, then your daily plan is bigger and then it's worse for everybody. So it's just a very different system. And then you encounter it and you don't know what to do about it. And some people had to become hypocrites seeing that and just living this double life, double standards.
What was the official status of Christianity during that time?
Well, you can say that in Brezhnev's here, things were much more relaxed. Christianity was still persecuted, but not as much as before. And it depended on where you lived. It was interesting that at that time, Christianity was a sort of a fashionable thing among intelligentsia, something that intellectuals wanted to be around. But, for example, in the place where I grew up, it was a city of 175,000 people, and there were no churches anywhere around. So the only time I saw any Christian churches, in that case those were Russian Orthodox churches, were when I traveled to main cities, and I was in Moscow and Novosibirsk, and there I could see some select churches, but not in my home city.
Were Christians able to worship freely, to speak freely?
Well, when you think about free worship, there is a certain kind of line where you want to define what is a free worship. For example, you come to a worship and then you will be executed right away, or you come to a worship and you will be put in prison, or you come to a worship and you can lose a job, or you come to a worship and people know you're a baptized Christian and then you will be able to stay safe in your environment, but you will not be able to enter the university or college. And so there are all these different I don't know how to explain it. It's like in Stalin's era, it was one level of freedom. In Khrushchev, it was a different one. In Brezhnev, it was still different. There was no complete freedom, but it wasn't as bad as some other time. But to be a Christian and become upper class was not possible because for any major advancement, you had to be a member of the Communist Party.
Why was that a conflict with Christianity?
Because the idea of Soviet ideology and Soviet state was to construct a new type of a person that would be a Soviet person. And the Soviet person had to have his or her own ideology. And that ideology was not a Christian one. You could think of Soviet ideology as some utopian system, partly taken from the biblical concept, only without God and without Christ, that people, by their own efforts, would build a perfect society some times in the distant future. But in order to do that during this life, this time, we have to sacrifice our lives for this distant future and our distant descendants.
You were baptized at the age of 20. Were you raised in a Christian home?
No, I was not raised in a Christian home. It was completely the opposite. It was an atheist home. And in fact, my grandmother, whom I remember very little from my early childhood, she was an instructor on so-called scientific atheism.
How did you come to be baptized at the age of 20?
It was a long process, including reading some biblical quotes from different books, including some Soviet books from my grandmother, and some other aspects were reading some Christian ideas from novels, from literature, including classic Russian literature. And then finally, when I was at the university, those years were the ones when the Soviet Union fell down. And I finally encountered some missionaries and talked to them. And we studied the Bible. It was the Epistle to Romans. And this is how I got converted.
Was that your first exposure to the Epistle to Romans?
That was my first exposure. That's right. I read Sermon on the Mount when I was a school student, and I got scared. I was frightened by the high moral demands of it, and then I closed the book. But Romans, for the first time, I studied when I was a university student.
How, being raised in an atheist home, how did you regard Christianity before you became a Christian?
You would just not have an idea what Christianity is, because it's not part of your regular life. Among our teachers in school, they were different types. For example, we had one teacher of history who was a zealous communist person by his conviction. And I remember this case when in the sixth grade, I believe it was, we studied medieval history. And one of the guys sitting in the back row made a casual sign of the cross, kind of for fun. And this teacher got really mad, and he asked him to stand up. And then he explained to everybody that this is a terrible sign to make, and that Inquisition that killed Giordano Bruno and many other people did the same sign of the cross. And it was something that he could not do any time in his life. So he put that guy to shame because of that.
What was your reaction when you did read the epistle to Romans?
Well, it was, as I said, not just reading, but very careful study of epistle to Romans verse by verse. And I think that despite the fact that some aspects of that epistle are difficult to understand, some intricate nuances, in general, the line of thinking of St. Paul there is very transparent and very logical. And so I really was able to understand the way of salvation. So that at first, the Gentiles are blamed for the wrong thoughts and wrong deeds they're doing, and then the Jews, and then the whole world is claimed to be guilty before God. And then the gospel comes by way of evangelical proclamation in chapter 3. So that was very clear to me, and it kind of made sense.
How did life for Christians change with the fall of the Soviet Union?
Well, the first people that experienced, they were Soviet people, and they were not ready for freedom. 1990s was a difficult time because along with newly acquired freedom, it was time of economic anarchy and instability, rise of crime, many people losing their jobs, people not knowing how to live in new circumstances. But at the same time, at that time, people were very interested in religion, and it was very easy to do mission work in all kinds of circumstances. And it was possible, for example, something that is not possible now, to have Bible study and special Christian sessions at the schools and universities. This is how our congregation in Novosibirsk came about, by our current bishop. At the time he was a pastor, he conducted a Bible study at the university. And many students just came to listen to some biblical stuff. So people were seeking for some spiritual things, because in Soviet Union there was this communist ideology, but by the end of Soviet Union, people inherently knew it was bankrupt. And so there was this ideological void, and this void needed to be filled. So now in 1990s was the time of exciting search for new truth. But later on, as capitalism settled, people became more and more interested in their material career kind of orientation, and right now it's more difficult to attract people to just study the Bible and do spiritual things.
Dr. Alexei Strelcov is our guest. We're talking about Lutheranism in Russia. On the other side, how is Christianity faring in Russia today?
I think we've reached a point where it requires a lot more work and actual discernment than it used to.
Journalist Mark Hemingway, speaker at the 2021 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, July 23rd and 24th at Concordia University, Chicago.
Just because you read something in black and white does not mean that it's in any way reliable. And in fact, you should probably assume that the default media worldview is hostile to, say, a Lutheran worldview. and act accordingly in terms of verifying that information with multiple sources and using your best judgment in terms of who you trust and who you don't.
You can participate in a Q&A with Mark and Molly Hemingway at this year's Making the Case Conference. The premier conference for Christian laity is Friday, July 23rd and Saturday, July 24th in Chicago. Attendance is limited. Learn more and register at issuesetc.org or by calling 618-223-8385.
Casting Christ's net on the internet. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Logia Journal, the Confessional Dogmatic Series. The works of Kurt Marquardt and many other resources are all brought to you by Luther Academy. Did you know that during this time of COVID-19, your purchases and donations help Luther Academy supply these same resources to pastors around the world? Please consider helping us with this important need through your prayers and financial support. Learn how you can help by visiting lutheracademy.com, lutheracademy.com.
Faith Lutheran School in Plano, Texas is now enrolling for the coming school year. What makes us unique? A confessional Lutheran school offering a classical education for preschool through the 12th grades. Faith Lutheran School features rigorous classes that incorporate a focus on wisdom, truth, virtue, and the historic Christian faith. Live online classes are also available for high school students worldwide. To learn more about Faith Lutheran School or to submit an application, visit flsplano.org. That's flsplano.org.
We're discussing Lutheranism in Russia with Dr. Alexei Streltsov of Lutheran Theological Seminary in Novosibirsk, Russia. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Ad Crucem is Latin for to the cross. Ad Crucem is a Christian greeting card, jewelry, art, gift, and housewares company with Christ-centered, cross-focused products for home and church. Learn more at adcrucem.com, adcrucem.com. Dr. Streltsov, how would you describe Christianity in Russia today?
It is not easy to describe it in just a couple of words, but the official story goes that Russia is an intensely religious, spiritual country, and in fact there are people who are earnest, sincere Christians of different confessions. Of course, the Russian Orthodox Church is the predominant one, but if you look at it statistically, very few people come to the church, very few people attend the church other than being baptized, and even at Easter service, less than 2% of population participate at the services. So right now, unfortunately, this is still a result of long years, many years of communist propaganda and destruction of inherent ties and connections and traditions that we had. So now I think, by and large, Russia is not a Christian country, if you think about level of the people. I see some good signs among some younger people, but it's not enough to really change it dramatically.
You mentioned the Russian Orthodox Church. Talk about its role in the religious landscape there. Are they easy to deal with or difficult to deal with?
I don't know if it's a matter of Russia in particular or the whole Christian world in general, but it seems that the church, and here I include the Russian Orthodox Church, is doing her best when it's not a state religion. Like I said in the beginning of our conversation, in late Soviet years, Orthodox faith and Christian faith in general was popular among intelligentsia. Right now, many people view official Orthodox Church with certain suspicion. They think it is too close to the state party line and it's just a religious subsidiary of the state and it hurts the image of the Orthodox Church. So this is the way people in general look at it.
Is the Russian government neutral or is it friendly toward Christianity?
I think Russian government is neutral, is not definitely not unfriendly. And our point of comparison is with Soviet years. Compared to Soviet years, this is like luxury. This is paradise. So this is really good. In many other spheres, many things depend on politicians or officials in certain places, so I imagine that in some regions it may be better than in the other regions. Where we are in Novosibirsk, I think things are relatively stable and we have no reason to complain.
What are the main challenges to the Lutheran Church in Russia?
The major challenge that happened in 1990s and early 2000 was mass exodus of ethnic Germans and also ethnic Finns, but also especially Germans, back to Germany. So Lutheran Church, through that, lost much of its potential base. Right now, it is still possible to identify some people who had Lutheran roots. But by and large, it's a matter of mission work. If you want to attract new people, it should be either through families having many children or through attracting some new converts.
Talk about how men are trained for the pastoral office at Lutheran Theological Seminary in Novosibirsk.
Well, we have a very high view and regard of the pastoral office. And because of that, we promote classical system of pastoral training. That is, we have an organized, established seminary that has an academic program that lasts for 5 years. It is 4 years of classes and 1 year of internship or vicarage. And in this program, our students study the biblical languages, namely Hebrew and Greek. They study theological English, and they study all the main courses that are generally offered to the future Lutheran pastors. I think because of our context in Russia and also because of our understanding of theology, we place more emphasis on the early church and patristics and on the Gospels. Our students study all of the Gospels in depth.
What is the average Lutheran congregation like in Russia?
Very difficult to speak here about some typical congregation, because within Russia, between different jurisdictions that are represented in Russia, and there are several of them, and between different areas and between larger cities and smaller towns and rural areas, there are great differences and variations. For example, in some more central locations, there are some traditional church buildings which used to belong to the Lutheran Church that were returned to the Lutheran Church. And this is very good when you could see some old historic buildings. In our church that I represent, Siberian Evangelical Lutheran Church, we have one example of this building in Tomsk. It's a beautiful wooden church that resembles the old church that stood there that was demolished by the communists in 1930s. However, many of Lutheran congregations or parishes have to rent some facilities or use facilities that are not freestanding churches and do not look like a church from the outside. And you really have to get inside the area to see a worship space and to appreciate what it is, but from the outside it looks more like an administrative building.
How would you describe life under communism, former life under communism, to your children who did not experience that?
I think it's pretty much impossible. Even my children, I talk to them, and for them, it's a matter of theoretical knowledge. And in this way, they are not much different from their Western counterparts. Perhaps through some of their teachers who are older and who taught in previous Soviet years, they have some point of reference. But I find that it's very difficult to describe this when somebody to whom you talk did not go through this experience. Because it's part of our life, it's part of our blood. I would say that there are some experiences that I would rather not have. For example, like being in prison. Many people would say that this is not a good experience to have. And being in a Soviet system, well, it makes us more versatile in a way, but at the same time, there is more intense feeling about things inside and a bit more fear, a bit less ability to relax. So, and I see younger children growing up, they don't have that, and I envy them in that sense.
You said that you have detected some of the undertones of what was going on before the fall of the Soviet Union in the United States. Would you describe that for us?
It's not just me. It's a general consensus among many people coming out of former Soviet world that when they talk to each other or just freely share about things, it's general consensus is that when they observe some of the developments, they see that they recognize many, many elements of Soviet life as they remember it growing up. Namely, it's a system of control. It's a system of ideology when you are afraid to state your own opinion, but you have to say things that are correct just because somebody expects you to say that. And then the whole system is geared toward changing your mind. It's like in Orwell's book, a famous book, that you have to start thinking the proper way. And this is what we observe is taking place because people are afraid to state their opinion, and sooner or later they also begin to think a different way.
What can 21st century American Christians learn from Russian Christians during communism?
Stay faithful as long as possible. Have an emphasis on family. Have family instruction. Be very careful about church attendance. Don't trust your children to be educated by somebody else, but verify how they are educated. And if you encounter cases of some bad ideological influence, don't be afraid to be a bit cynical about it. Just don't take things for granted, but develop somewhat critical thinking and know what your interests are and what your confession is, and think about the outside world in a way that would correlate to your own confession.
Finally, what can you tell us about the Lutheran Theological Seminary in Novosibirsk, Russia, and the Siberian Evangelical Lutheran Church?
Well, we are a small church and we are a small seminary, but we try to be faithful and educate our students in the best possible way. I believe that our influence now surpasses our scale, namely that we are able to teach students and have people listen to our courses from neighboring countries and from some faraway countries. And of course, the medium of our language is Russian, but this is what we try to do. And right now, our seminary is trying to establish an endowment here in the United States, and it's a Save the Seminary campaign. And I hope that it will give us fiscal stability for the years to come if we are successful with that.
Dr. Alexei Streltsov is rector of the Lutheran Theological Seminary in Novosibirsk, Russia. Learn more about Lutheran Theological Seminary in Novosibirsk at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk on Demand Archives. Dr. Streltsov, thank you.
Yes, thank you.
When we come back on this Tuesday, July the 13th, it's listener email, talkback@issuesetc.org, and the Issues Etc. listener comment line, 618-223-8382.
This week on The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, we'll continue feasting our way through 1 Corinthians with saying the Amen. God among you, all may learn, decently and in order, and of first importance. Join me, Pastor Will Wheaton, for The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, your daily 15-minute verse-by-verse Bible study on demand. Listen at thewordendures.org or your favorite podcast provider.
We confess that the Church is one holy, Catholic, and apostolic, and yet, as we look at the Church here in 2021, it hardly seems one holy, Catholic, apostolic Church. How do we come to grips with this reality? Is the Church one? How is she united? How do we look to her head, Jesus Christ? Well, this question and many others are discussed in the June-July issue of the Lutheran Witness. It's all about the Church. To order your copy, visit cph.org/witness and visit our website, witness.lcms.org, to learn more. The Lutheran Witness, helping you look at the world from a Lutheran perspective.
For your next family vacation, consider our beach house. A charming three-bedroom vacation rental on beautiful Siesta Key. Just off Sarasota, Florida, Siesta Key Beach, consistently voted America's best, is just 100 steps away. Whether you're watching the sunset over the Gulf of Mexico or frolicking in the warm surf, you and your family will fall in love with Siesta Key. Check us out at SiestaKeyRentalGenie.com or call Virginia at 941-266-1858.
If you abide in my word, you are truly my disciples, and you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. Those words of Jesus have been the motto of Concordia University Chicago for generations. We build our education on the Word of God, the only sure foundation for learning. I'm Dr. Adam Francisco, Dean of the College of Theology, Arts, and Humanities at Concordia Chicago, and I invite you to visit us to discover what it means for God's Word to become the foundation of your future. Learn more at cuchicago.edu.
Lutheranism in the public square. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The world is filled with darkness now. It's maybe darker than it's ever been before.
Issues Etc. guest Dr. Adam Kuntz.
The reason to come to Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne and to study to be a pastor is so that the light of Christ can shine that much more brightly. It's not a time for retreat. It's not a time for hiding. It's a time to hear the Lord's call and to come out and to serve Him, to shine His light into very dark places in people's souls, in people's lives, throughout our nation and throughout the world.
Learn more about studying for the vocation of pastor at ctsfw.edu or call 1-800-481-2155. Forming servants in Jesus Christ who teach the faithful, reach the lost, and care for all. Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, ctsfw.edu or 1-800-481-2155.